looking for a warm hand. "Hold on," I said. I went to find May to tell her that I had an invitation. I wished I had a better outfit on. I was wearing dark blue stretch pants and a faded sleeveless shirt decorated with rosebuds. Daisy, as usual, had issued her compliments earlier in the day. She said my outfit looked like something people in the Depression wore. May came out and looked Ruby up and down, mumbling phrases under her breath. Perhaps she was comparing him to her handsome and dead Willard Jensen. She said to him, "Don't be late with her." We walked across the street, watching out for every pebble on the road. We sat down and Ruby ordered a beer, and then I did too. We didn't say anything. Finally, he asked me, "Do you want some peanuts?" And I said, "Sure." I felt embarrassed at even having a mouth to put food in. It didn't seem like a girl should eat. It didn't seem like eating was how dates got to like each other. Then, after hours of grinning and eating, staring at the walls and the ceiling, picking skin around our cuticles, I mentioned how peaceful he looked in the inner tube, and he said, "Yeah, he liked it out there in the middle of the lake. Only thing that bothered a person was flies, but that was something he could pretty much handle." "I love being outside more than just about anywhere," I said. He took a big swallow of beer. His fingers gripping the glass were dirty. "Yeah," he said. We grinned at each other some more. It was a nice habit we were getting into. "I used to get up at 6 in the morning and fish until night," he said. "I got some fish. Sheesh, you wouldn't believe the size of them babies. My old man had to drag me in at night by the ears. I didn't want to stop catching fish." He told me about his lures and the bait. He loved night crawlers. He'd watch the fish come up, stuck through a bright red and yellow lure. "I'd watch them flap around for a couple of minutes," he said, "and then I'd throw them back. Boy, were they relieved." He laughed a great ha-ha, which sounded like something that didn't quite belong to him. Still, I had a clear picture of little Ruby fishing in a dazzling white T-shirt with every single white tooth in his mouth. I saw him by himself for hours, listening to the water and the bees buzzing around him on the bank. "What did you think about all day long there by the river?" I asked him, putting a peanut in my mouth as primly as I could. "Stuff," he said. I looked at the water floating by. I liked being warm and peaceful. Sometimes I didn't even have my line in the water. I just slept on the bank. I sure liked being warm and peaceful. When he said those words, I knew we were meant for each other. There wasn't one doubt in my mind. It happened that quickly. We were on our third beer when I told Ruby that I had an aunt named Sydney in DeKalb. "You ever been there?" he asked. "A couple of times." I lied. I tried to look like I had done that 1,000,001 times, had beers with a man, but my teeth were chattering, and also the undersides of my thighs were quivering against the seat, so I could barely make sense. "What do you do besides pretend you're a fish out in the middle of the lake?" I whispered, changing the subject. That question made him grin again for at least 1 minute. He liked my teasing. He told me he worked at the gas station, and they were all set to make him manager. But then the boss got mad at him for no reason and shouted, "You're fired." "That ain't fair," I said. And he shook his head and said he was looking for another job. He said he could get a job at the glass factory they have in Stillwater. Only it got so noisy in there, and he had real fragile ears. He couldn't tolerate too much noise. "I was born with him that way," he told me, and I felt right then and there like leaning over and kissing his feeble ears. I couldn't believe I was with the waterman. It was crazy to hear him utter words after I'd seen him in my dreams, a sea animal without a drop of human blood. To tell the truth, and it probably is not a revelation, I had had fantasy dreams about him ever since I met him. He was a seal, black and shiny, barking at me. We were always swimming together with our legs touching, our stomachs rubbing close when we rolled over, when we were playing games. Each time I looked up at him, I had a jolt. I had to connect the person talking to me with the one my mind had created. I bit my tongue, so I know here I was in the flesh having romance like I had seen on TV all my life. I didn't think anything like it would ever happen to me. I always put myself in other people's shoes, people such as Emma Bovary or Elizabeth Bennet. I imagined I was them, and then love came to me. Once I opened my mouth, after the third beer, I couldn't stop talking to Ruby. I told him things I never mentioned to anyone, not even Aunt Sid. He made me tell the secrets because he looked straight into my face and smiled, and because he fished all day long by the river when he was young. I told him about one of my favorite sights in the world, old Wendell Kate riding his bike down the road, herding his cows, and pumping his horn. Ruby nodded and looked at me with beer foam on his lips, making a mustache. And then I blurted that I loved, almost more than anything, the first spring peepers singing up from the marsh come April, and how full of longing the little frogs must be, wanting a mate so desperately after being frozen all winter long. I felt my whole head thunk on the floor and glow like an ember when I mentioned the word mate. He smiled and gazed at me with his wide blue eyes, hardly blinking. He listened carefully to my words. He listened like Miss Finch used to. I knew he understood my thoughts. I quickly said I always sniffed the earth and wished on stars, and that I knew something powerful was going to take me from Honey Creek. I said it so Ruby would hear me and maybe make my plans come true. Afterwards, before he took me home, we went up to Andrews Hill, the hunting grounds outside of Honey Creek, because of what I said about liking to sniff the earth. We stood outside and were quiet together, breathing deeply, and he watched me as if he had to have lessons in breathing. He watched my chest rise and fall. When we got into the car, he spoke slowly, his grin spreading across his face as he moved closer. He said, "Do you want to see my little one-eyed snake?" "Sure," I said. I didn't mind snakes. They usually had fancy designs on their back. There must be reasons for the patterns, but I didn't know what they could be. I thought maybe Ruby could teach me. Maybe he was an expert on nature. He stretched both his arms around me and started kissing my mouth. First slowly on the outside, and then he went inside. Our teeth clacked together. For a long time I saw nothing but searing white light with my eyes closed. The whiteness filled me up until in a flash I saw Madame Bovary letting her bathrobe go. The next part happened before I could open my eyes. I felt my slacks down at my knees. He yanked them down. He was saying, "Oh, God, baby, oh, Christ, in a convertible." He was hurting me with a dagger, reaching under and inside. I cried out, but he didn't hear. He had my arm in his grip while he pricked the skin with his teeth. When he let go, he laughed 1 minute and then moaned the next. He kept shouting, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus," for a reason I couldn't understand. When he was done, it didn't take more than one long minute. He collapsed on top of me. He shuddered. I could see his eyes half closed, just the white part. When he opened his eyes, he laughed again. He told me to wait. He'd make me feel better. He said he was Mr. Magic Fingers. Some friends had told him so. I was whimpering, a sound I hate to think of. Even though he rocked me in his stiff arms, I still wanted to cry, because I was so dumb about all the things a person is supposed to know about in life. I cried because Ruby didn't hear my shaking voice. I wanted to escape from him, but there he was, holding me in his arms, like I'm newly born, saying so jubilantly, "Baby, you'll get to like what we was just doing. Take it from expert me. I never met a lady that didn't go crazy in the sack." I didn't believe anything he said. I sniffed and swallowed and watched a firefly make its way along the floor of the car. He was attentive for a minute. He patted my head with his filthy hands. It wasn't exactly like on some TV shows I've seen where the man breaks into the apartment, takes the girl with a lead pipe at her head, and then dumps her on the sofa. When I got home, May asked me, with a queer grin on her face, was I in one piece? And I sat at the table eating some old stale cake, smiling down at it, except I wanted to die right then and there, because I didn't know who the good people were. I ran out of the house, wishing I could crawl into the ground, join the worms. I stumbled up to the plateau where I always go, and I wept. When I stopped, I rolled over on my back, tired and wet. I looked up to the sky, to the swan constellation. I looked up to all the untroubled stars shining down on me from so far away. Something inside, maybe the part of me that's the best bowler in the universe, whispered faintly that I was more than an animal. And I tried to remember Miss Finch telling me I had good thoughts. "Good thoughts," she said. And every time the memory came to me of Ruby and his cruelty, I thought of Aunt Sid, the liar, saying how big the world is, and how when she conducts her chorus and sees all the wide-open mouths and hears the music coming out of them, she knows there's a force, perhaps born of the earth itself, that insists on beauty. Chapter 9. A couple of days later, Daisy came strutting into Trim and Tidy. She leaned way over the counter, sweeping her tongue along the outside of her mouth, as if her lips were made of butterscotch candies. She started singing the song, "Love is a Many Splendored Thing," in an opera star voice. I've heard those singers on TV. They sound scared to death. I turned my back on Daisy. I stood between the racks, plastic on both sides of me. She called out, "Does he kiss good?" She knew I didn't know anything about kissing. She reminded me of Missy Baker and Diane Crawford jeering. I was standing between all the plastic bags that say, "Caution, plastic can cause suffocation." I didn't need plastic. I was smothering in my own skin, and Daisy thought it was funny. She moved on to a tuneless song, singing the words, "I need you, I want you," over and over. I felt feverish, and I couldn't stop trembling. Finally, I had to turn around and shout, "Stop it, Daisy!" Tears streamed down my cheeks, into my frowning mouth, past my chin. She couldn't believe the way I looked. She came behind the counter quickly. Regular people aren't supposed to do that, looking so worried. I loved her wrinkled forehead. She asked, "What's the matter?" That question uncorked me. I cried my head off on her shoulder. I got her black shirt with the silver letters BITCH all wet. Daisy went back and told Artie I had to have a little break. She said I was having my period and I needed to walk to distract myself from the pain. Daisy and I went up the highway to the Dairy Queen. We sat on the picnic benches and I told her what Ruby had done to me and how I was sure I had been sliced in half. I said I didn't ever want to do that again, and Daisy giggled. She said she couldn't help it. She explained the first time is like sitting on a spike, but there is improvement, like you wouldn't believe. She put her arm around me and said, "Don't worry, you have that first experience behind you now." She said, "Ruby likes you so much. He was too crazy for you." "How come he's on probation?" I asked her, blowing my nose on Dairy Queen's napkins. It was the first time I wondered seriously if he had done something against the law. But she said, "He ain't on probation. He got a little kooky after his old ma died and went around smashing stuff. Nothing major. He just goes to that same class I do for drunk drivers. The teacher likes him because he don't mouth off. He sits so quiet. I ain't sure what he did before," she said, handing me another napkin. "But it wasn't anything too terrible." Drunk driving didn't bother me. I know it isn't responsible, but just about everyone in Honey Creek, including May, drives around smash now and then. The bars are all out of town, so you can't help driving home a little tipsy. Most of all, I was worried that he went around showing hundreds of girls his little one-eyed snake. But Daisy said, "Far as I know, he don't have a girlfriend, besides you." "Don't kill me, okay?" she said, trying not to crack a smile. "I won't," I said, even though I had the feeling I might want to. "I told Ruby where you worked, and about league night. I've never seen a man wanting to know a girl so bad. I told him he should take something into Trim and Tidy to get cleaned. I was his coach, see? He really thinks you're a hot little number." "Thanks, Daisy," I said, trying to scowl. She bought me an ice cream to make up for it. I didn't mention to her that somewhere inside of me I kept saying the words over and over to myself. "He thinks you're a hot little number." I went to the ladies' room and looked at my face, trying to see it through Ruby's eyes. I had hives all over from crying, and my eyes were puffy. I wasn't exactly at my best. We walked slowly up the road. I knew I was going to be embarrassed talking to Artie. He thought it was the time of the month for me. He didn't do anything but pat my shoulder once as he rushed by. All afternoon I pictured Daisy and the girls she told me about, who went out with men and let them perform all types of maneuvers on and in their bodies. Daisy described some of the details. She didn't blush. She said on her date sometimes she kneeled on the floor of the truck and put her mouth places I wouldn't even think could taste good. That's putting it mildly. Still, Daisy and her acquaintances didn't look so happy for the fancy sensations. It isn't nice to say of my best friend, but I knew Daisy was a cheap girl. There wasn't anyone who truly loved her. She didn't have strong attachments to her partners either. She used her men for their money and for their certain body parts, and if she was lucky, she was finished with them before they got tired of her. She gave herself away to millions. She sucked on them like they were food for life, and then she spat it out. Even though I wasn't an expert on men, I understood that she didn't have perfect bliss in life. She was restless, without knowing why. It was true that I didn't have experience with men, except for Elmer, and he doesn't count. And Matt, of course, but he never had much of a body. He was a brain stuck on a pole. Artie, my boss, was the one man I liked. He called his wife Dumpling. always made me smile to hear it. Also, I tolerated the Rev. He isn't too bad, if you don't consider the crazy stories he believes in. However, Mr. Darcy was the man I truly admired. I see him clearly. He is exceptionally tall, and his head is covered with black curly hair. He looks serious except when he smiles at you. It knocks you right straight across the room. His smile is that brilliant. He doesn't ever do anything to hurt girls. I longed for him to walk out of his book and reach for my hand. I didn't see Ruby for the longest time, but I couldn't stop thinking about him. There was something woke up in me. I started saying to myself, in bed, if Ruby doesn't kiss me by tomorrow night, I'm going to actually die. I reminded myself of the wild dogs who attack and kill sheep. Once the dogs get a taste of blood in their mouths, they keep coming back to injure the poor innocent animals. I had to learn a new sensation, and I had to have some more of it instantly. I wanted terribly to kiss Ruby's mouth, more than eating food, or drinking, or sleeping. It was the craziest predicament, because first I never wanted to see him again, after the trick he played on me, but then he crept into my head, thinking, as he did, that I was a hot number. His opinion of me had to make me see him in a slightly different light. He noticed I had good points. Maybe he liked my nose. It isn't so bad. And the tone of my voice. And the way I teased him a little. Daisy said he couldn't help himself, that he was attracted to me. Far as I know, he was the first man in the history of the universe who noticed that I had a feminine lure. I ate my breakfast with my spoon in the cereal bowl stirring around, not knowing what my hand was up to. All I saw was blue eyes. I had to hope against all hope that Ruby's pizza became my face when he sat down to eat. To tell the truth, I wanted him to think of me, and only me, continuously. I made a big request to the Maker, that this be so. Each night, I went up to the plateau to talk, not to the stars or God, but to Ruby. He was listening to me. I knew he was. I repeatedly relived the beers we drank, and the words we said, and the kiss we gave each other in his car. Only I didn't go one step farther than the kiss. I recreated history. I had Ruby telling me I was the most beautiful girl he had ever seen. He couldn't keep himself away. He just couldn't help loving me. And then we stared at each other indefinitely, until we almost dropped dead. When he drove me home, we met May on the doorstep, and we all had to laugh over how stifling the weather was, how miserable the entire summer had been. In the night, I dreamed I was just like Daisy, kneeling on the floor of his car, making him cry out, and he always did the same thing to me with his expert tongue. Then, about 3 weeks after our date, he walked into Trim and Tidy. The blood drained from my legs, every single last drop. I felt it wanting to seep out my toenails. There I stood like I didn't have limbs, like there was nothing to my body except a fierce heart thumping out of sync. The Madame Bovary hot, juicy flashes came over me. I didn't invite the feelings, but they were present nonetheless. Ruby grinned at me from the door and stared sweetly with his wide eyes. They weren't blinking much. When he started to talk, he blinked numerous times, to make up for all the seconds when his eyeballs didn't have moisture washing over them. "Do you want to get a drink at Mabel's?" he asked, and I murmured weakly, "Sure." When we sat down at our spot in the bar, I looked at him. And even though I wanted to go straight to the back seat of his car and try what he did before, because Daisy said I'd got my first experience out of the way, I mumbled, "I'm not about to handle that one-eyed snake of yours." It took all my gumption to speak. My teeth were loose and chattering inside my closed mouth. I think I expected him to grin at me forever. But he didn't. He looked down at his hands and frowned. He couldn't say anything. I tried to peek under, to see his face. His head was bowed so low it practically touched the table. "What's the matter?" I asked. "You don't like me no more," he said, turning away. I had to laugh because he was such a bashful person behind his cocky walk. Without thinking, I took his hands in mine. He had long, slim fingers that curled around my hand the instant we touched, as if he had been waiting for something to hold on to for a long time. "Course I like you, Ruby," I whispered. "I want to know you so bad." His face changed gradually. He wasn't positive I meant it, but after I said the words again, his big old grin came back, like the sun on the rise. First you see a ray of light, and then it gets brighter, until finally there's this burst, and it's morning. I was powerfully strong, capable of making a person feel brilliant and sure. And for the first time, I had nerve. For once in my life, I wasn't going to let people pull up my dress and look underneath. I said to Ruby, "I like discussing the river, but I just ain't ready for..." I couldn't say exactly, but he knew what I was talking about. I said I wanted all the sensations in my body to go slowly. I didn't want to miss out on one feeling. Then I had to whisper in his defective ears, "You can kiss me all you want." And he did, right away, there in the bar. He kissed me all over my face while I sat still and shivered. I loved his face so close to mine. He said he was sorry for hurting me in the car. He said, "Baby, I thought you maybe done that millions of times." "I never had no boyfriend before," I told him. "I don't believe it." He stared at me and shook his head. "I don't believe it." "I ain't lying to you. You was my first kiss." "Which closet you been hiding in?" He was amazed I was such a late bloomer. He said, "Wasn't you ready to explode?" And then he looked bashful again, because of his appetite. I felt so glad being together, apologizing. Later, we drove down to Honey Creek, and he sang to me. He sang, "You're 16, you're beautiful, and you're mine." I didn't ask him where he learned about girls. I didn't want to hear how many others he had kissed. Daisy told me Hazel taught him. She's an old bag in Stillwater. She pretends she's a young girl still, but she couldn't fool anyone. She has crimson hair. It isn't her natural color, I can tell you that much. It's in tight curls. Looks like her head is killing her. And she wears blouses that are open all the way down to her waist. They lace up the front. She wears them loose so you can see her fake leopard skin bra. Plus her jeans are too small for a pot belly that wants to pop out of her fly. She's real sensual, all right. You can hear her coming a million miles away in her spike-heeled cowboy boots. The wrinkles on her neck are the giveaway. She's at least 50 years old. I thought females were dried up by then.
Daisy said that even though Hazel looked ferocious, she was a kitten underneath, that she treated Ruby decently most of the time. She said she saw them hugging outside of Dino's once, after Hazel got mad at him and chased him around the bar with a fly swatter in one hand and a broken beer bottle in the other. I guess Ruby didn't visit her too much anymore. She found some other boys she liked better. I didn't ask him questions about her. I didn't want to know anything else about his education. At supper the next night, I asked May if Ruby could come bowling with us. And she said he didn't look like he had too much upstairs, the way he grinned at people. He looked like a fool. I said I had my own eyes, and Ruby looked just fine to me. Well, if you ain't gonna turn feisty on me on account of some man with bugged-out eyes and a girl's name. She didn't look so hot herself. We were eating sweet corn, and she had a bunch of hulls stuck between her teeth. She said, "Don't you know that he wrecked Viola Hansen's car? Plus, he stole something from the gas station where he worked." She spoke as if Ruby were a famous bandit, when in fact she had never heard about him before I met him. She got her information from Dee Dee. I looked down the table and I saw the sweet blue eyes of Ruby and the way he sniffed the earth and looked out to the universe. And I raised my voice. I said, "Are you perfect? I've seen you loaded and driving too," I mentioned, leaning toward her. "I've seen the way you squished Daddy down so much he left you. He never did anything right in your smart opinion. You was always at his heels. That's what you did, Ma. You squished Daddy so much he drove down the road. He likes me and Matt. He sends us $10 when he thinks it's our birthday. He don't ever do that for you." She froze. Her eyes were fixed on my face. "You just ain't no angel," I said slowly, to wrap it up. She looked at me as if I were a complete stranger. I thought perhaps her head would collapse from the weight of the reprimand into something akin to a pancake. But the next minute, I could tell she wanted to wallop me. She started to raise her hand. "Don't touch me, Ma," I begged. "I just want to be a little happy. Ruby don't do real bad stuff," I pleaded. "And he likes me. He's good to me." May snorted. She shoved her chair back and got up to slam some objects around. I didn't say anything more, and after a few crashes, metal on metal, she came back to the kitchen and sank into her seat. She stared at the table. Finally, she slapped the potholder down and said, "I'll kill you if you get a baby and you're not married. Understand?" I said she could be sure I wasn't going to do that. If I got pregnant without a husband, I'd be like Dee Dee's daughter Lou. Then May would have to live in Dee Dee's shoes, and that's one place she didn't want to experience. May didn't pay too much attention to my answer. She was watching me drift away. She saw me getting married and blasting off in the getaway car, decorated with 10 cans. I could see plainly on her face that she was thinking to herself. She was asking, "Who's going to take care of me when I'm over the hill? How am I going to pay the bills with my puny salary?" She was watching herself move into the low-income housing apartments in Stillwater. The walls are cardboard, and there's millions of kids chasing up and down the halls. You can smell everyone's cooking, and there isn't a backyard for a garden. She was picturing herself without a soul in the world. Her narrow eyes said to me, "I don't need you. Go ahead. Leave." But I knew she wished I'd run to her feet and kiss her slippers that looked like dirty carpet you let the dog sleep on. She wished I'd say, "I'll never leave you, Ma. Please be my friend." I had to laugh at her fears. I had about $100 in my old plastic pig. How was I supposed to pick up and leave? Did she imagine that Ruby was actually a millionaire disguised as a drunk driver? He didn't even have a job. May was sore over what I said about Elmer, even though she knew I was right, and she couldn't make an argument. It was a wound that festered for a long time. She didn't forget easily. She put the fight away for a later date. Her big worry right at the moment was getting old and uglier and being left alone. She was going to be left to rot away. She'd tell me details at supper, out of the blue. She'd push her chair back and she'd say, "All them piles of dirty diapers that I used to wash." She said having babies made her body change its shape drastically. May had the habit of saying, "Don't have kids. They let you down each time." She had a nick on her nipple where I bit her once. She made it clear that I owed her something. I owed her double, since we both knew Matt wasn't going to come through. At any rate, Ruby came bowling with us, and I have to admit, as a bowler, he was a lost cause. He couldn't get that ball to go anywhere except the gutter. He laughed and turned around to find me when he didn't knock one pin down. I felt like part of a big family, though. There was May and Dee Dee and Daisy and Ruby and Artie, even Randall with his bit of honey, sitting around making sure we weren't cheating on the score sheet. Daisy and Ruby talked about their social workers down at the resource center and the different times they got crocked. In those days, I didn't write Aunt Sid too much because I couldn't explain how it was for me, and I was afraid she might not like me anymore if she knew I drank alcohol and spent half my life in a bowling alley. I didn't want her to know I thought about Ruby every single minute. Aunt Sid, with her choir and lilies pinned to her chest, might think I'm trash and stop telling me I'm a good person. I couldn't stand to think of that. So I wrote her short letters saying Trim and Tidy was perfect and May hadn't bawled me out too much, telling me to say, "Have a nice day." I mentioned briefly that I kind of liked to bowl and that we all went to Town Lanes occasionally. Aunt Sid wrote back and asked me, "Have you read a good book lately?" I knew I disappointed her. The cassette recorder she had given me didn't work anymore. I only thought about the blind tapes. They were living inside of me. There were thousands of different characters milling around, saying advice, telling their stories to each other. There was Hunk Finn, giving Madame Bovary a ride down the Mississippi, telling her not to worry about her dumb husband and all the cash she owed people for silk shawls and other things she couldn't resist. They lay on that raft, smelled the muddy water, and she called the clouds names of men from her village. She wanted to kiss Huck like crazy, but she knew it wasn't appropriate. She controlled herself pretty carefully. I didn't tell Aunt Sid that now when I conjured up Mr. Darcy, he looked almost exactly like Ruby. I wondered if Mr. Darcy had rotten teeth. Maybe he did, because I bet in those days they didn't have dentists. I heard on the radio that people in England eat pounds of sugar, and their teeth aren't good like ours over here in the U.S. Ruby and I went to various dark places. We drank beer and talked about fishing. We kissed like wild horses in the back of his car. He always said, "Please, baby, come on. Come on." And I had to say, like someone's mother, "That's enough now." Even though I wanted it all as fiercely as he did, it seemed like there wasn't anything more important on earth except having him near me that way. Buildings could burn right next to us in the car, and if we were in the middle of a kiss, we wouldn't notice. I was learning about the perverse streaks within us. For example, I knew Ruby admired me for my strict control. We were experiencing something serious, partly because I wasn't like Hazel or Daisy, just letting the man have his way. We were developing a friendship. I can say in perfect truth that that's what it was. Ruby would say to me, "You must be a goddess or something." And I'd smile at him mysteriously. He'd tease me. He'd say, "Baby, you a nun underneath your clothes?" Sometimes, maybe it isn't very nice, I felt I had him eating out of my hand, the way he whispered into my face, "Ain't you a goddess?" We had such sweet times in his car, parked up on Andrews Hill in the hunting grounds. With the windows open, we sat, watching the night go by us, feeling that we were the only people who had ever breathed the air together and admired the evening. I had to feel sorry for Ruby because he didn't have an easy life. You could tell it by looking at him. He smiled too much. He was covering up aches he didn't want to speak of. One time, we were down at Mabel's, and Ruby was guzzling more than usual. Instead of getting raucous and joyful, he became more somber with each drink. I didn't know what to do, so I talked about nothing. Finally, he interrupted me. He said, "Baby, what happens when someone dies?" "Huh?" I said. "Where do they go?" He was starting to cry. I thought of all the carcasses of sheep I had seen in my life, sinking into the pasture until all you saw was a rib cage and skull picked clean. "They don't go anywhere, Ruby, far as I know." I figured I might as well tell it like it was. "Their bodies rot in the ground, and all you have left is the memory. It's up to you to remember the person." It was no comfort, but I didn't know what else to say, except, "That's about it." He was bawling into his sleeve, and I felt so sorry. I took his hands and held them with all my might. "Don't think about it," I said. "We're here now, and I love you so much." I wasn't planning on saying those words, but there they were. Ruby stopped crying instantly. He blinked several times and wiped his nose on his sleeve. I leaned across the table and put my hand on his face to make him know better. I whispered again, "I love you, Ruby." He burst into a grin, and then he jumped up and started dancing around as if he were a wind-up bear and my words had activated him. He made me laugh until my side ached. He went up to the bar and told the farmers he didn't even know that I loved him. He went to each one and said, "See that lady? She loves me." Then he came back and took my hand and kneeled on the floor like a chivalrous knight. He put his head in my lap. He kept saying, sweet baby, baby, baby." He's the silliest person in the world at times, Ruby is. What I wanted him to do was marry me. Then we'd climb into bed, and it'd be like a ship. We'd sail away. I didn't think too hard about what it meant to get married. I figured I wanted to be a wife because I loved Ruby, and I could tell he needed a girl to cook him good food and buy him clean undershirts. I figured with those three ingredients, especially counting true love, a person couldn't go wrong being married. I didn't stop to think because I knew I was plunging headfirst towards happiness. In addition, I was fed up watching the world march by me. I couldn't stand seeing people such as Daisy's little sister Lou have a baby. They named her Midnight Star Sandra Dee. The baby was called Midnight for short, but maybe when she went to first grade, she'd want to be Sandra Dee. "She's got the option," is how Daisy explained it. Lou was 16 years old, and already she was a mother. I knew if I didn't hurry up, I was going to be past the prime in no time flat. They brought Midnight over on their way home from the hospital. Lou said when the baby came out, her toenails were already long, and they had to cut them right away. I couldn't stop looking at the baby, complete with all her parts. I couldn't get over how she started with Lou and one of the three possible boys who cornered her one night by the drugstore while she giggled. In the beginning was that old word, always comes to me. That's a sentence the Rev uses nearly every Sunday. Maybe inside of me all that existed, besides I Love Ruby, were letters floating around in my body, the names of my babies. When I saw Midnight Star Sandra Dee, I knew I wanted to be in a family. I knew I wanted to look after a baby, all mine. I could picture Ruby and me, the father and the mother. I conjured up Ruby coming home from work, singing. I'd be feeding our baby something delicious from a jar. A couple of nights after I told Ruby the news, exactly how I felt about him, he came over and we went outside. I took him to the woods because I couldn't wait to show him some of my favorite places. We were listening to the crickets in the grass. I've always wanted to sneak up on crickets so they keep making their racket even when I'm close. Although they quit singing, we could almost feel them breathing. I could imagine myself a cricket with my antennae on alert, sensing two pairs of gigantic feet coming closer and being too terrified to squeak or run. When we moved away, they started up again. They were so relieved. We were sitting on a blanket listening when Ruby said, "Baby, you make my crazy head feel better. You know that? You're so sweet and nice." I lapped up all the words. I asked him to say that sentence over again. He didn't say anything for a second. He took a deep breath and then whispered, "How about you and me get married?" I quick told him, "Yes, yes, yes, yes." He took a ring out of his pocket. He said he bought it with green stamps once and couldn't figure out why he did it, but now he knew he had been saving it for me. It had been for me all along. It had 5 sparkling diamonds in a row. Ruby put it on my finger and said now we were engaged and I was his girl. I said that was just fine with me. There's times I wish I could have keeled over and died right then and there. Chapter 10. It was the end of August when Ruby proposed to me, when we were out in the woods and he slipped diamonds on my finger. He put his head on my lap and I stroked his hair. We talked about our romance, remembering the high points. Ruby told me Daisy gave him advice all the time, in particular after our first date. She told him I was pretty upset and what he should do to make friends with me again. They rehearsed speeches he could say to make me forgive him. She even gave him pointers on proposing. We laughed over Daisy and what a busybody she can be. I was engaged to be married. I couldn't be angry at Daisy for running my life. When it started to rain and we were damp and uncomfortable, I figured I'd better tell May what we were up to, get it over with. Ruby and I kissed, leaning against his car. I half wanted to get in, forget the wedding, and drive off with him into the wilds of Indiana. I came into the kitchen where May was making pickles. She had on her pickle apron, the green one with yellow flowers that stretches across the hill of her middle and ties in a large crisp bow at the back. The whole place smelled like dill and vinegar, so strong I'm sure the stench in there could have cured any disease you had, guaranteed. I sat down and put my hands out on the table, with the 5 diamonds showing. while she stuffed pickles in the quart jar. She packed them in so there wasn't any air space. I said, "Ma, I'm going to marry Ruby." She didn't even quit stuffing. She laughed as if I'd just told her the joke of the year. She said, "How was a man?" Then stopped because she had to shove a gherkin in so tight and it took all her concentration. Who don't have no job going to support a wife and then a whole slew of babies? "Ruby'll find himself a job, that's how," I said. She shook her head and pursed her lips. She didn't know why anyone would hire Ruby with what she called his disconnected brain. It was starting to thunder, but we hardly noticed it. "Don't say that, Ma," I cried. "There ain't a thing wrong with his brain." "Whenever people ain't exactly how you think they should be, you call them retarded. It ain't fair. Ruby's good and kind," I shouted. "He's good and kind." "Turn off the boiling water," she said. "Well, my, my, my. You can't eat good and kind. You ever had good and kind sandwiches? They're real juicy, all right. They don't stick to your ribs too good, though." She was snickering and snorting, shaking her head and slamming the lids on her pickles, screwing on the covers. "These better seal," she said to me, like it was going to be my fault if they didn't. "You listen for them to click. My ears ain't that accurate. I'm getting so old." She was always saying words of that sort. I should have told her Ruby had weak ears, too. Perhaps it was something they could have talked about in common. "Ma," I said, "I'm going to marry Ruby. Can you hear me? Should I shout them words into your deaf ears?" That was the clincher. She turned around to me as fast as an old lady can and said in a stream, "I suppose you think you're going to live here. I bet you think I'll make the money, and you'll sit around staring into space, and Ruby'll drink morning, noon, and night. I know what you're planning." She closed her eyes, and then she chuckled over how we were going to dupe her. That's how May is sometimes. She thinks everyone is against her, and she's left with nothing but a scrubby chicken yard. I didn't say anything. I got up and walked over and stood in front of her at the sink. The rain was coming in through the window, splashing the counter, but I said to myself, "So what?" In those days, I felt like a strong nun, skinny and tough, who had the words from God or someone who knew the answers. It was Ruby who made me feel absolute. I said softly, but actually wanting to make a display like the thunder, "Ma, how can you think we're trying to trick you?" I could tell by her small eyes that she was scared of certain events in the future. I said, "I'm going to keep working, and Ruby'll do his best to find a job. I know he will." I had to shiver from my dripping clothes. For once, May didn't make any mention of my mess. I talked quiet still. I said, "You know we don't have a single cent. We love each other, ain't that enough? Don't you remember what it was like when you were in my position? Can't you be happy for me?" I had practiced my speech out in the rain before I came in to tell May the good news. I felt as if a soap opera personality had fed me the words. They came out so smooth. "Close the window," she said, and then she went to the table. She put her head in her hands. I followed, saying, "If it's okay, we'll live here for a while we get our bearings. We don't have a place to go," I said. "We'll help you out, Ma. We'll do the heavy work." I said it like I was beseeching her, only I knew those exact words were what she wanted to hear. The rain pounded at the windows as if it wanted to get in on the discussion. May squeezed her eyes shut again and bit her lower lip. I waited. Maybe she was praying. After the longest time, she took a deep breath and said she figured it might be all right to have some company before her heart gave out and she died alone. "You're not going to die for a long time," I said to her in my cheerful voice. I couldn't imagine anyone as large as May dying. But she started to cry. She said she hoped Matt would get famous before she kicked off so she could celebrate. "Maybe he'll get into People magazine," she said. "I hope so. And they'll have us in there, too. Only we won't be in Honey Creek anymore. Matt will come and get us and buy us one of them condominiums, and we'll go live in Florida, and all that hot sunshine." "Sure, Ma," I said. "Did one of those jars click? Didn't I hear one of them seal?" she asked. And I said, "No, Ma, that's rain out there." She mentioned again how her ears weren't worth a noodle. She had seen my ring, but she didn't make a comment until about 6 months later, when she told me she could tell the diamonds were phony. She murmured that Ruby probably robbed a dime store. I picked Daisy for my bridesmaid. Dee Dee and May and Daisy and I went all the way to Rockford to buy material for Daisy's dress, and then Dee Dee sewed it. It was blue with white dots all over it, and it had a ruffle swooping down over her chest. She was going to look glamorous in it, I could predict that much. I figured she'd wear gallons of makeup for the ceremony, and I had to laugh thinking of her prancing down the aisle like she's a bird we don't even have in Illinois. When I asked Ruby who we should invite, he said he didn't have too many friends to speak of, and his family lived so far away now. They weren't crazy about him anyhow. He's kind of a loner, Ruby is. That's why we were meant for each other. So I said, "Why don't we have a real small wedding?" "Baby, I don't care," he whispered in my ear. "I just want to marry you. We could do it in the swamp. I got some of them gators." We invited May and Dee Dee's family, and the girls and Artie from Trim and Tidy, and the Red Bell Bowling League, and the Rev, of course, plus a few of the ladies from the church. May began to get thrilled when she realized she had a perfect excuse to get Matt home. She wrote him a letter and said I was getting married, so he'd have to be there to give me away. We never once mentioned contacting Elmer. Matt wrote back and said he could get away for 2 days. Isn't that an honor? Probably all the experiments in his lab would get ruined if he was gone longer than 48 hours. He probably had to get a babysitter to watch over his moldy petri dishes. May flipped when his postcard came. The 5 smeared lines almost had her convinced that he was coming home to stay. I wanted Aunt Sid to come more than anyone, and I wrote her and asked her if she would mind being present, even though May still had the grudge. I thought that if I ever got terribly brave, I would ask May if she could remember why she was mad at Sid. Aunt Sid wrote back and said she wouldn't miss my wedding for all the world, and that if she wasn't now chairman of the music department, she would have visited us at least once a year. She hadn't been to see us in quite a while, but I honestly hadn't missed her brief visits. I didn't like the thought of her surprising me at Trim and Tidy. I hated the vision of her blonde head looming up in the door, and then she'd come to greet me with outstretched arms, and I'd have my hands full of Mrs. Portland's red cashmere dress with turkey gravy all down the front. The pads on my fingers were always inky from the carbons in the checks. If she had come, I would have had to feel shame at being one dumb finisher, and that was something I could easily do without. My wedding was a different matter altogether. It was supposed to be the greatest day in a girl's life. "Ma," I said one night at supper, "Aunt Sid is coming to my wedding." May stopped chewing. She called the air names I wouldn't repeat. I don't know if she was talking about me or Aunt Sid. "Don't wreck it for me," I said. "You have Matt, and I have Aunt Sid. Fair is fair." Ruby used to come over in the early days, and we'd sit at the table eating pie and making plans. Ruby loved baseball. He knew all the teams, and he'd tell me facts about the players. "Someday, baby," he said, "you and me are going to go to a Cubs game." He taught me information about sports, sitting there at the kitchen table. He told me what all the yards were for in football. He ran around in the kitchen, explaining it to me like he was one whole team himself. Matter of fact, he was both teams. Never mind that I couldn't understand a word he said. He still bought packets of baseball cards with a pink gum inside. I saw his shoeboxes filled with cards. I saw his face when he blew bubbles that popped and got stuck on his eyes and on every inch of his nose. We laughed hard, scrubbing his cheeks with rubbing alcohol. We were getting married in October. May said that was pretty hasty, considering I had only met Ruby in July, but we didn't want to wait around until next spring. I couldn't see what was wrong with October. I felt like I was a horse galloping toward October with an urgent message. I could taste how desperately I wanted Ruby. The desire for him was a flavor that rose up my throat and made my whole body thirst. We didn't talk about life plans too much, because we were concentrating on holding out until our wedding night. I thought maybe Ruby was worried about coming to live in May's house, but he grinned and kissed my hands when I told him how it was going to be for a while. I told him, "There ain't no way we can afford our own place, Ruby," I said. "We'll have to do our best to get along with her. She ain't exactly Little Miss Sunshine every minute." All Ruby said was, "It's okay, baby. You should have seen the pigsty Ruby lived in before we got married. It was one small room with a toilet in the hall. Nobody had cleaned it since the Huns invaded Rome. May's house was like a palace compared." We had our picture taken for the wedding section of the newspaper. I'm sitting down smiling with my mouth closed, and Ruby standing, his hand on my shoulder. He's staring straight ahead as if he's bracing himself for something. The picture took me by surprise, because Ruby looks like Miss Finch. His eyes are red dots. May said I should register down at Marcy's in town so we could get some new plates and glasses, and then she and I picked out towels and dishes with rosebuds and violets and daisies around the border. I had my name up on the wedding board at the drugstore in Stillwater. It said my wedding date also. I went in there about every day to look at the bulletin board, to see my name in the white letters. Sometimes you need something like that to make sure you're on the planet. We received other presents, too, because the girls at Trim and Tidy gave me a shower at lunch hour. I got a blender and a red nightie with fringe all over it. There wasn't any solid fabric to speak of attached to it. Artie was allowed to attend, and he said he thought the garment was snazzy. Plus, he thought the bride was snazzy also. Actually, I wanted to wear the nightie on a gigantic Harley motorcycle with no underpants on. I wished Ruby owned a bike. Perhaps May would have liked him instantly if he had owned something large. She was quiet in the weeks before the wedding. She knew there was nothing she could say to me about my decision, since I was an adult taking charge of my life. Naturally, she still had the comments about how I should brush my hair. It looked like a bush. How the chickens were going to starve if I didn't feed them this instant. The usual commands I didn't even hear anymore. To myself, I said, "It's time for me to accomplish something, be part of a family." I was feeling alive, picking out invitations and flowers. I knew how all the animals in spring must feel, building nests and waiting for the male to bring in their catch. May was counting the days until Matt arrived in Honey Creek. I swear I could hear her counting. I knew she wasn't wild about Ruby. It didn't take an advanced degree to appreciate her opinion. But I wanted the arrangement to work out. I knew that when she saw how much we loved each other, it'd catch on, and she'd be glad in herself. I prayed up on the plateau. I prayed to the winter constellations that weren't yet visible. I prayed for their mercy. Matt came home on Friday afternoon, the day before my wedding. When he walked in the door, May rushed to him and nearly knocked him down. He caught himself and backed up to the wall and said, "Hi." She was already crying about how he never wrote, how he had forgotten we were his family. She was dead right on that score. I can't stand looking at May when she breaks down. It's terrifying to see her lose her strength. Matt didn't seem to want to look at her either. He stared at the floor until she came to kiss him and paw him. Then he closed his eyes. "Hi, Matt," I said from the living room. And he said, "Hi." He was wearing a gray raincoat that came past his knees, and it had pleats in the back. I didn't say anything because I guessed I was the person of honor. For once, he could ask me questions if he felt like it. I wasn't going to bow before his large head just because he went to MIT and had his name in Time magazine for thinking one thought about comets. He said, "I hear you're getting married." And I said, "Yep, that's right." I wanted to ask him then and there,